Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, a senior security analyst at WatchGuard Threat Lab, and as usual,
I'm Corey Knockreiner, the grumpy dude in the corner.
Each week on the podcast, we will analyze the methods and techniques behind the latest hacks, attacks, and breaches. We'll tell you what happened, how the bad guys did it, and how to protect your business, employees, and customers. This week, we discuss an attack against LTE 4G wireless networks that could allow bad guys to control your web traffic if you're a valuable enough target. Then we dive into an overview of HTTPS and the protocols that keep our web browsing secure. Let's get into it. This week, we have an interesting topic from earlier in the week, or I guess at the time of this being published last week, about an attack against LTE.
Yeah. The Alter attack.
Alter.
So before LTE's in that beautiful marketing name. Way to work that out, researchers.
Bring up a good point. Before we dive into the actual vulnerabilities, let's go off the checkbox. They have a website.
Yep.
They have a marketable name.
Yeah.
I saw some custom images on it, but there wasn't a logo.
There was no logo, though. They self-refer to it if you read their webpage, though. They mentioned there could be a logo one day.
Okay. Well, they've
so
got a few of them.
At least they have tongue-in-cheek. They understand the issue with marketing names and security vulnerabilities.
It seems to be all the craze these days. But Alter is actually an active attack in a series of multiple vulnerabilities that they found.
Yeah, I think three total.
Passive ones, right. And it was found by a few researchers.
Four of them. I recognize Thorsten Holtz. I believe he's a German researcher, but there's a number of others as well.
And a German university, and then a New York University in Abu Dhabi.
Okay. Yeah.
They all put out a paper on Monday as a preview. I think they were going to be talking about at a conference next year, but they put out a preview of their vulnerabilities they found after going through the responsible disclosure process with the stakeholders in LTE.
Yeah, basically, what is it, the GSM authority something, or something like that?
Yeah. They were kind of interesting. So they had two passive attacks. One of them caught my eye, which was website fingerprinting, which I think actually has some potential carryover to other communication protocols, where they were saying, so communications over a cellular network are encrypted. Yeah. And there's mutual authentication, which makes it hard to get in the middle of that.
Encrypted for sure, and also integrity checked too. Like you'll hear later about the altering part of the attack. Usually they check the integrity of the packet too, mm-hmm. to make sure no one can modify it normally.
Right. And so encryption though means that you can't see what's going on inside of these communications if you're just a passive outsider. But they found that websites have a particular traffic pattern. So viewing a video on FoxNews.com has a specific traffic pattern, and then browsing to like Neopets.com has a different traffic pattern. And if you as a passive listener go and fingerprint all these different websites, like maybe the most popular websites, you can then passively listen to other people's LTE communications and potentially identify what websites they're going to based off the traffic patterns alone. And I think they said they had, 84%, 89%?
Yeah, plus or minus 10 or whatever.
Which is halfway decent, but that wasn't a controlled lab environment, they said, and they haven't tested an actual real-world attack yet.
Yeah.
But it's still interesting.
It's interesting, but I don't think it's a huge as far as severity. I think there's probably a number of other ways you can guess where people are going on networks. So I didn't think this was either of the passive attacks were really that mm-hmm. big a deal. And they're really not the one that the attack's named after,
exactly.
The Alter one. So it's the active attack that's pretty scary in my opinion.
The active attack being Alter. So this one was actually, it relies on some custom hardware. They were using software-defined radios.
Yeah.
And they actually had to use a custom stack, a custom protocol stack.
But I believe even the passive one is relied on this too, because they technically have to man in the middle your LTE traffic. But they're doing it in a way where they're not like taking over. So they use the software-defined radios to put up a fake LTE tower that hopefully that you connect to by being the closest.
Like Stingrays. You might have heard of those
similar
before.
To Stingray, but they mentioned these vulnerabilities are different. But rather than trying to totally take over man in the middle your traffic and send it to their internet provider, they're just looking at it, but then letting it forward on. And they're basically becoming the client to your real LTE tower and forwarding your traffic onto that, whether they're passively listening to it or in this next one, the Alter one we're talking about, they forward it on, but this is where that integrity check is such a big deal, because depending on how much you know about the OSI network stack out there, you know, there's seven different layers of OSI, and the data link layer is one of those layers. And even though LTE has great security mechanisms as far as integrity checks and authentication for a lot of the application layer and some
even
below
the network layer.
Exactly. But they don't apparently on the data link layer.
Yeah. So they're saying that even though the connection setup itself is authenticated, meaning you can't pretend to be the cell tower on a network level, even though it's encrypted, meaning you can't technically see what's inside the packet, so long as there's no integrity checking, they could insert themselves in a way where on the data link layer, they're still sending off these encrypted packets to and from where they're supposed to go.
Yeah, they're forwarding your real packets.
But they're able to modify the encrypted traffic, so long as you know what the plain text
is.
Because they're able to insert themselves at this layer. So they've relied on no integrity checking, meaning with integrity checking, typically if the client or server notices the packet has been modified, there's algorithms you can use to tell if a bit has been flipped, for example, they will discard it and demand a new one. Without integrity checking, someone in the middle with the ability to actively modify these packets could change something in them. So in this case, they were relying on the encryption method. The way that it was used, or the way it's typically used, it's called XOR. So you basically, how do I explain this in a very simple manner? You math the data with the encrypted key stream in order to generate the encrypted ciphertext. And the way these encryption algorithms work is that if you know the plain text, you can actually un-XOR it and then change it and then re-XOR it with the keystream, but you have to know exactly what the plaintext is. So in their example, they used DNS,
yep.
Which DNS traffic is used to resolve domain names when you're trying to visit a website. And they typically have a very format, easily guessable format.
Yeah.
So that you can go modify.
The way a DNS request is made is the same. Yeah. Practically every time with small difference.
So long as you know like the client's DNS servers that they're trying to connect to, you could potentially change that DNS server to be one controlled by you as the attacker, and then you control.
Which is what they did.
Yeah, and then you control all of their domain name lookups.
Classic DNS poisoning.
Exactly. So again, it's not super practical right now. They even said that...
Not super practical, more because of the expense and the level of knowledge you have to... I mean, one, you have to have the equipment to fake a LTE tower. Two, you have to get it close enough to a victim that you become the first. Three, they haven't released source code for this, so you'd have to figure out how to... It's a significant amount of effort.
And they even said the everyday person doesn't really have to worry about
it. Yeah, they pretty much said that only highly sophisticated actors will probably target journalists, politicians, nation-state level attack stuff.
And it does rely on a lack of integrity checking on the network layer, but it also relies on, in the application layer, lack of verification for the data itself. There are protections against this, even if they are able to execute this
attack. Which we'll probably talk about at the end of this.
Yeah.
So I will say, by the way, the only real fix for this, by the way, it's an LTE specification issue. They would have to update 4G LTE specification. The researchers said that they're not even sure if anyone will bother. So this may not be ever quote unquote patched. Hopefully 5G has mechanisms one day when it becomes more widespread that guard against this.
Yeah, hopefully. So there are protections on the application level though for this. So
yeah, for users that are worried about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. The way that they are carrying out this attack is modifying DNS traffic. They're spoofing DNS. And there's protocols in DNS, or at least extensions, to help protect against this. DNSSEC is one that's finally starting to take off a bit. Where
define a bit.
A bit. Very, very slowly.
I remember when Kaminsky first argued for it. It's taken a while.
If you're not familiar with DNSSEC, it uses a form of public key encryption, basically, to sign DNS responses, where me as a company owner or website owner, I say, mark.com can only be, I control mark.com, I have a public key for it, and only responses that are signed by my public key or verified by my public key are valid for this. So even if you're able to spoof a DNS server, you don't have access to the private key that I have hidden. So you can't forge the DNS request for it, so long as the client verifies that
It's the same public-private key crypto we're applying to everything, including secure websites, but we're doing it to DNS requests and DNS servers now.
And speaking of secure websites, even HTTPS has mechanisms to protect against DNS spoofing like this, like HSTS, HTTP Strict Transport Security, I think it stands for.
Where,
thank you. Pat on the back. Still early. Where your browser can be informed of websites that require HTTPS. And then so long as and then HTTPS has built-in authentication mechanisms for it.
I think we'll talk about this in a later segment. And it basically, if a website's trying to trick you into downgrading from the HTTPS version, this HSTS forces you to actually use the cert for that particular site.
And then that allows your browser to validate the authentication or authenticity of the website. So even if DNS is spoofed, you can still be protected there. And that's a lot more widespread than DNSSEC. Yeah.
So it's a very interesting attack. By the way, there's a video if anyone's interested. The same, you can find this attack at, I believe they just call it alter-attack.com is their official marketing webpage. And besides having the full technical white paper, which is interesting for nerds out there to read like us, they have a YouTube demonstration video where they show it. And I think it was at Hotmail. They tried to show how you could man in the middle Hotmail. But again, if a web site like Hotmail or Gmail was using HSTS and cert pinning and all that, it should be harder to even if you're giving a poisoned response.
Much more difficult.
Yeah, you'll get a cert error or something like that when you try to go to it.
But I mean, again, when technical protections fail, you can still typically social engineer your victim around it too. So
absolutely. Anyways, interesting attack.
Something to walk out for.
I don't think we have to throw out our LTE devices yet.
Not yet.
Oh, we forgot one interesting thing, by the way. We actually made a prediction this year.
That's right.
We actually predicted that there would be more wireless attacks. And when we said wireless, we meant more than just Wi-Fi. And it would all be because of software-defined radios getting cheaper. You'd see more attacks on, I don't know, Zigbee, Bluetooth already being attacked. But anything that uses any sort of wireless frequency that's non-standard. And guess what? Cellular traffic kind of qualifies. So this was using software-defined radios to fake an LTE tower. So one example of our prediction starting to come true.
Pat on the back for us.
Go WatchGuard!
All right, welcome back. And in our main section today, we're going to be discussing HTTPS, or encryption on the modern internet. So when you go visit a website, your web traffic actually bounces through several routers on the way there. Your ISP modem on your main gateway leaving out your house or your work network. And then it hops on several of your ISP's border routers. Then it goes into the backbone of the internet.
It might hit some place in New York before going where apparently a lot of the backbone is that go to Europe or whatever.
Yep.
And worse yet, by the way, those bounces are the natural bounces, but depending on what's in between you and the internet, including a guest wireless network.
The NSA.
the surveillance van you see in Wi-Fi. No, I'm even talking about you and why can't I think of the name? The pineapple.
Yeah.
You know, someone can insert an extra bounce sometimes without you even knowing.
Which means that without encryption, anyone on one of these hops, one of these routers, whether it be a pineapple inside your network or some three-letter agency listening halfway through the network, could potentially view and or modify all of your traffic along the way. And we've seen, I'm going to call it malicious, but not like nation state stealing your secrets. We've seen instances of even internet service providers modifying traffic.
Yeah.
Comcast got in trouble for it last year by injecting JavaScript into unencrypted websites to pop up saying, hey, time to upgrade your modem.
And that's especially crappy, by the way, because that same JavaScript insertion could easily be used to launch some browser exploit or a zero day. So it just sucks to see any ISP do that.
They luckily got quite a bit of flack for that.
So, maybe they'll start doing it again now that net neutrality has been defeated.
Luckily, though, encryption can solve some of these issues. So HTTPS is one method for both authenticating and encrypting web traffic to and from your client to whatever web server you are going to. You want to go over how HTTPS first came about?
Sure, why not? So basically, HTTPS is HTTP is the hypertext transport protocol, and the S there is just basically adding secure. Woohoo! And I think it was first developed by Netscape. I remember using exactly. You're the age you don't remember, but I actually remember using
the Netscape browser.
Navigator. You had the Navigator.
Yeah,
awesome.
I did.
Didn't Navigator even ship with one of those CDs that got you onto Prodigy or something? Anyways, you know, a long time ago, Netscape helped start that RFC. If you don't know anything about RFCs, they stand for Request for Comment. It kind of blows my mind that that's what they stand for. But basically, organizations, people come up and write standards that they give to, is it the IETF?
Yep.
Internet Engineering Task Force. Exactly. To ratify this as a internet standard, and they eventually turn it into a standard that everyone uses. It is kind of funny that Request for Comment is the event, but that's really about publicly giving it to everyone, letting them comment on what they think about the standard and change it before it gets ratified. But really, all the internet graybeards used RFCs to develop everything that is the internet nowadays. So I believe RFC 2818 was one of the ones that Netscape first coined to talk about doing HTTPS, where they use a new mechanism called, or an encryption mechanism called TLS, which I'm sure you know a lot about.
Yep. So in the early days, HTTPS used SSL as a key exchange or encryption
SSL
method.
SSL, TLS. Hopefully you're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, you might know SSL from the fun vulnerability a few years back called Poodle. That really finally put the final nail in the coffin for that protocol. The standard itself, though, was ratified with TLS as the main method.
So that Poodle vulnerability was when your web traffic had too much hair and you really ought to shave it.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. Had nothing to do with using oracles in order to traffic and
oracles. Wow,
yeah.
there's a whole dive into how using an oracle to decrypt things.
There's not enough.
That's
time
a lot of
in
maths.
The world. Yes, the maths. You use maths to decrypt the traffic. So, with an HTTPS connection, before sending traffic or a request to a website to go download your favorite CryptoKitty or something. Your browser first sets up a.
The best.
Sorry.
Your browser, inside joke. Go
yes.
See Mark's RSA talk.
Yeah, please. Your browser first sets up a encrypted channel for this connection. It does that through a TLS negotiation, a transport layer security, I believe that stands for.
Now do SSL. The old one.
Secure sockets layer?
There you go.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Oh, boy.
You don't need caffeine for your acronym knees.
Not enough coffee in the world. So it first starts out with a handshake. So the server must prove its identity to the client. Sometimes the client has to prove its identity to the server. But this handshake, this identity proof, they use something called certificates.
Yeah. You made it sound all hard, but we kind of talked about certificates, right, already.
Yeah.
Public, private key crypto. A lot of it's just starting with, you know, that private public key pair, both on the client and the server side. The private one only you or the server knows, and the public one is one you can share with each other to set up identity. So it really is all based on public, private key crypto.
Yep. And then the certificate wraps that key up with like a domain name for the website you're going to, and then it's cryptographically signed. So, signed, proven in a way that it can be verified at a later date. It's cryptographically signed by a certificate authority. So these centralized organizations, companies that we've decided we trust to
which, by the way, a big weakness. I mean, we probably don't have time to get into it, but all of this public-private key crypto depends on us having these central authorities that kind of say, yes, these are the right certs.
We've had issues in the past.
Yeah, Komodo, DigiNotar, when those central authorities break down.
Was it Symantec that just had all of their CAs revoked out of Google Chrome?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yep. So when they go bad, a lot goes bad.
Yeah. And luckily, your browser, your operating system, each maintain lists of CAs that they trust. And if you trust your browser, then you trust those CA lists.
You tend not to have to worry about it.
They
the industry, Google, Apple, and Microsoft are really the big browser names right now, and they've done a pretty good job. If two of those entities don't trust the CA anymore, probably a good idea for you not to trust that CA either.
Yes. So once your client has verified the certificate provided by the server, it uses a decides on a key exchange algorithm and an encryption algorithm, again, just lots of maths. Then they actually use those algorithms to agree on a encrypted session key, and then all of your traffic from then on is encrypted.
Yep.
I wish I could dive much more.
A lot of little details there. There's a ton of algorithms. Some have been depreciated. Some are bad. So there's a lot of actual complexity now to making sure you maintain the right ciphers, because some are rumored to have backdoors. Some are just weak nowadays.
Some are just horribly inefficient still.
Exactly. But long story short, I mean, if you're using a modern browser, you're probably fine. You don't have to worry about it. Just know that smart people are doing the math to keep your web safe. I will say the one thing that I love about HTTPS that not a lot of people talk about. I mean, a lot of focus on the encryption part, keeping our web traffic private. You know, we don't want people to insert advertisements. We don't necessarily want our ISP to know everything we do online, not because we're doing anything wrong, but just because it's privacy, yeah. Right? So that's what people focus on. But I think the integrity checking or the authenticity of domains is even more important, in my opinion. So don't forget the fact that this whole certificate setup that's being done proves that when you go to google.com, it really is google.com if all these mechanisms, including ones we talked about before, like HSTS, work. You're not going to some jerk that's poisoned your DNS and that this changed, you know, is broadcasting google.com from their own IP.
And this is important because earlier in our news section, we talked about using DNS spoofing
exactly.
as a way to point you towards a malicious website.
And it gets simpler than that. I mean, phishing attacks are still the most very, very common. Sometimes they're used to push malware, but the classic phishing was all about getting you to go to quote unquote Bank of America, which was really not Bank of America. So that's why using HTTPS across the web, which really is what the industry is pointing for, it's not just about encrypting everything. It's about making sure you're going to the right place and you're not being spoofed in some way.
And the best bit is that all of this happens in the background without you really having to do anything. Your browser takes care of all this for you. So long as it completes successfully, you get that little green lock or...
Look for the green lock and double check the domain name is really the one you went to. And that's really all you have to do.
That said, I think it's Chrome in next year, either next year or the year after, they're removing the green lock.
Oh, and that's because Chrome's pretty aggressive, man.
Yeah.
You lose the green lock just by, you know, not having HTTPS at all. I mean, they've
or
taken some
hard
stance. Or having weaker
algorithms.
Yeah, yeah. They're making it so that, you know, it's just going to air out unless it's HTTPS
exactly.
and this is the default.
So
which,
they're is going to,
which you know,
good.
You can argue it's good.
So really, though, you're only notified if something goes wrong.
Yeah,
you've probably encountered some of the issues before, like certificate errors. If you go to a page and suddenly Firefox or Chrome says certificate verification failed with some cryptic error message.
I think the way a lot of our listeners are probably IT admins or pro users that have different devices. If you've ever had a device that had a web UI, they tend to have a secure web page for management, and they always use something called a self-signed certificate. And so you've probably encountered this error the first time you go to your new network router or something like that to its web UI and seen that, hey, this has a certificate error, but if you look, it's just the self-signed cert.
Yep. And there's more errors you can get past just certificates. You can have protocol issues.
Absolutely.
We actually saw this a lot with when Poodle first hit a few years ago, when people started realizing, hey, I probably should disable SSL version 3.0. Yep. And then they realized that they might still have a lot of legacy clients or servers that could
still
only
need
use
those
that.
Holds. Yep.
So the good news, though, is that's starting to finally go away. Most browsers are running TLS 1.2 nowadays, the most secure version. TLS 1.3 is on its way out and only causing a few more issues on its way in.
Yeah. And by the way, HTTPS is growing. I think about half of web traffic uses HTTPS now.
It's like half of the Alexa top 1 million or
something. Yeah, yeah. And if you go to Google, post a transparency report just talking about how much of their own domain sphere, if that's a new word I've coined, domain sphere, how many of their domains use it. And I think they're across 95% of all Google entities are using HTTPS.
And you can probably thank Google for a lot of this. They've
been pushing
hard for it. And then there's other organizations like Let's Encrypt that are making it easy for people to encrypt their websites.
Pros and cons of the Let's Encrypt.
Correct.
I love their general idea, but there's also malware authors that have found an easier way to encrypt their malicious domains as well.
Very true. And So speaking of malware authors, there are still ways to attack HTTPS, though. It isn't 100% perfect. There are ways around it, some of them requiring technical attacks, some of them requiring social engineering.
Would you say it's not, I don't think anything's ever perfect, but there are ways to protect your domain with other mechanisms we'll talk about
there are,
that can
yes.
get past many of these ways. So if implemented well, you can
generally
survive
do a
many
great
of
job.
These things.
Yes, at least on the technical level.
So I think the first one you're going to talk about, I remember, just because I remember it being a Black Hat talk, but it's SSL strip, and it was from a guy, a well-known researcher. I always screw up his name, but it's Moxie Marlinspike, a very interesting name slash maybe alias. I have to admit, I don't know. Either way, it's very cool. But he created SSL strip, which basically was kind of a downgrade attack.
Yeah.
It was a way to do man in the middles. And it essentially was, you know, you'd have if you could man in the middle traffic and start packet
like
capturing
a Wi-Fi
everything.
Pineapple or even on the wire somewhere.
Whatever it is. Yeah, yeah. As soon as someone went to https://facebook, you could kind of capture that. But then you could kind of remove the HTTPS and force them to downgrade to an HTTP connection. That's the most simple of the first things it did. It's kind of evolved from
it's
there.
It's one of my favorite tools. And so most people, when they go to a website, they don't manually enter https://whack/website.com.
Yeah.
They just enter website.com.
Facebook.com.
Facebook.com, yeah. Which means that they rely on the website server to take that connection over unencrypted HTTP and redirect it to a secure HTTPS site.
Assuming the website does that.
Correct.
It's up to the website. But something like Facebook did do that a while ago.
So if you're an attacker, you can simply prevent that redirect. Or on your end, do the redirect and have an encrypted channel between you and the website, but then serve it as unencrypted content back to the victim. And
suddenly someone's at, or you could do tricks, if I remember right, of going to https://www.facebook.com. And
that gets around HSTS. So again, HSTS, we've mentioned it a few times throughout this episode. It's a method for telling your browser or for websites to tell browsers that, hey, this site has to be loaded over HTTPS.
Yeah. So that's not only is Facebook trying to push the HTTP connection to HTTPS, but it's like, in fact, I'm not going to do it at all unless it is HTTPS.
Your browser will not let you load the page. You'll get an error and you won't be able to go through it. It'll just not load it because the website told you not to.
Yep.
And one of the ways you hinted at this to get around it is just modifying the domain name. So Ryan Orsi, our Wi-Fi security guru, does a great demo on this where he uses SSL strip and you can see the browser bar go www.facebook.com and then it just starts adding W's until it gets to a domain name that isn't part of their HSTS setup so that it can load without encryption.
A lot of big websites are offensively buying domains to kind of get around these, whether it's tricks around just spelling of Facebook, but this kind of SSL trick as well.
And there's other cool tricks within SSL strip too. It can go in and crawl the web page as it loads it, change any and all links in it from HTTPS to HTTP so that it tries to load them unencrypted as well. It's a pretty neat tool, but HSTS does a pretty decent job.
It's making it less effective.
Exactly. Instead of relying on technically breaking the connection, you rely on users not noticing that the domain name is slightly being modified.
Besides looking for the green lock, is why you should still look at the domain. And when Chrome gets rid of the green lock, your main job will be double checking that domain is really what you wanted.
Well, and luckily, when they get rid of the lock, they're also going to add this site is broken, not secure thing for anything that doesn't use HTTPS. So SSL strip is going to be much more difficult to sneak by.
And you still need to look at the domain because bad guys can give you a SSL site now, with Let's Encrypt for free.
That'd probably be a good plugin. So, I mean, speaking of certificates, that's another way around HTTPS is we rely heavily on what we call the chain of trust.
Yeah, we had the whole CA certificate authority conversation on that.
Yeah, so if an attacker can, say, compromise a CA or trick you into installing their CA that they own on your computer, they could man in the middle all of your connections and sign valid certificates for these websites.
Basically, that root certificate authority that you've trusted in your browser, anything it signs is now trusted.
Yep.
And By the way, we do this. Yeah. There's good reasons to do this, too.
Companies use it legitimately, like with HTTPS proxies.
For instance, our Firebox, you know, we have a network security device, and since almost all web traffic is becoming HTTPS or TLS SSL encrypted, you know, for us to really scan it effectively, we have to decrypt it and see it in it. So we do have a root CA, or you can actually use your own root CA that you can either put on our box or get from our box. And then we're going to start doing a man-in-the-middle attack. And that root CA is what allows us to do it without spawning 600 certificate errors.
Right, 600. Yeah. Oof.
Okay, 600 if you have 600 users browsing at the same time.
The there math checks out.
I know my math.
Well done. You must write encryption protocols.
Oh, shoot.
And I mean, there's been instances of, I mean, companies legitimately, there's been companies that have been doing it not so legitimately.
Oh, yeah.
Superfish from Lenovo is an example of this. Broke my heart when I found out that they were installing
manufactured installed spyware, essentially.
Oy. If you're not familiar with the Superfish saga, it was Lenovo on some of their laptops were installing a third-party CA certificate that basically gave capabilities to re-sign all certificates for websites you go visit. It's a form of adware in this case, and it was pre-installed by the manufacturer. Made me very upset when I found out about it.
Yeah, well, even worse when they did it again a few years later.
Fooled me once. Fool me twice, can't fool me again. Is that how it goes?
You did a little better than Bush.
But again, with compromised CAs, I mean, it's kind of hard to protect against this when it comes to like the main CAs in your web browser.
Yeah, that's a scary thing. I think industry hasn't talked about a lot. There's been so many cases, Symantec, DigiNotar, and Komodo. And while we do solve it quickly, I think we really need to figure out how we trust these third parties. But so there's not much we can do there as individuals.
Aside from just not installing certificates that, I mean, I can't say I've really seen many attacks where people try and get you to install a certificate, but potentially malware could do it. So
yeah,
something to keep an eye on, I suppose.
There's some mobile malware that installs different certificates more for provisioning, but not necessarily to man in the middle all your DNS.
Luckily, on mobile devices, at least in Android, I don't know in the case
you have
of
to allow
iPhone,
it.
You have to allow it, and then every time you turn on your phone again, it has a little in the notification bar. It says your connection may be being monitored. Anytime you have any third-party certificate installed,
iOS doesn't do that. iOS definitely, you do have to allow the provisioning certificate, but it doesn't do that. In fact, you're right about Android. I remember installing Packet Capture to capture traffic from an app I was analyzing, and it said, you know, it's being monitored.
Yeah. One of the other benefits of HTTPS is privacy protection, right?
Absolutely.
We mentioned this. You don't want your ISP knowing wherever you go to because you don't want them targeting ads at you. You don't want people being able to snoop in on your web traffic in general. Even if you're not doing anything bad, it's still a privacy consideration. But there are still issues with HTTPS when it comes to privacy.
Yeah, I think there's that server name identification.
Server name identifier.
Yeah.
So when you
we're talking about metadata identifying what you're doing in LTE. This is a different way of learning a bit about something from the metadata of HTTPS.
So nowadays, web servers typically host more than one website at the same IP address. CDNs are very common, things like Cloudflare, where there's a whole bunch of websites hosted behind a single IP. But before you can submit a HTTP request to a specific website, you still have to set up that encrypted connection. And part of that, you have to let the server know where you eventually want to talk to.
Yep.
And that's called the server name identifier. It's an extension within the SSL handshake that says
clearly showing where you want to go to.
In plain text, exactly what domain you want to go visit. So it is a privacy concern. It's information leak outside of the encrypted channel.
In fact, I'll even say it. One of our products, WebBlocker, does something called web categorization. Its goal is to make administrators be able to block certain types of sites. And while we do have HTTPS decryption, if you enable it, one of the ways that could still work with HTTPS was taking advantage of the SNI.
Yep. Luckily, though, there is a fix in the works for it. TLS 1.3 is the next iteration of the encryption protocol behind HTTPS. and they're adding the ability.
I wonder what they're going to do to SNI now.
They're going to encrypt it.
Oh, wow. Encryption? Really?
Is that SNI encryption is one of the things that's kind of delayed TLS 1.3 for quite some time. Because they were trying to figure out a way to make it work without breaking the internet. I don't know if you've read, they put out like a 6 or 7 page white paper on all their considerations behind SNI encryption and like all the uses that, or maybe even inadvertent uses that devices along the internet use it for.
I just gave you one inadvertent legitimate use for it, assuming you want that kind of capability as a business.
They identified several other instances where SNI in an unencrypted form is important. So they had to have a whole bunch of considerations for this new feature when it comes to implementing it without breaking the internet.
Yep.
But they found it. TLS 1.3 is on the way. It was just finalized, I think, like a month or two ago, the final spec for it. And it's just a matter of time for clients, servers, everyone to start adding full support. So there is a fix in the way for the privacy considerations. I'm sure that attackers will still find other ways around it, though, as they always do.
We'll see. Maybe it's the same thing as LTE. Maybe it's not the SNI, but it's traffic patterns.
It could be. I mean, that's actually kind of why I liked that bit where mapping websites with their traffic patterns, you could get information leakage out of that too.
Be interesting. So I guess we should wrap up with protections. I think we've talked a lot. SSL strip, you know, that's a common, easily available tool. I think we talked about HSTS. That's all about, forcing the browser to only load the secure web page. Is there anything else you should do around that?
Being mindful of the domain names in your web browser address bar. Yeah. Don't just mindlessly click through certificate or protocol errors in your browser when they pop up.
View them, be heavily suspicious of them immediately.
They've actually gotten a lot better at having plain text explanations for the error messages too. So even like my mom could go Google and figure out what's going on.
I have to admit there's times where they're getting a little too aggressive in that I was recently trying to connect to an older network device. It was having a self-signed certificate error. And if you go to something that has a certificate error, there's a button for more information. And there's sometimes a button there to say, go to this site anyways. And Chrome wouldn't even give me the button. In this case, I wanted to get to this old equipment that I knew was a self-signed certificate, but it didn't give me to go to it anyways. I had to load it up in a different browser to actually get there.
Sounds frustrating. And I know in a lot of cases, you can't get around some of the errors, like with HSTS.
Yep.
You can't get around it in most cases if there is a issue.
In this case, it was the cert was for a private IP, right. So I don't think it was HSTS forcing it.
What other tips can we give? So with...
We talked about compromised CAs. I know there's not much you can do about the official certificate authorities, but what about accepting any CA certificates?
Again, don't just mindlessly click through errors. Make sure you can go view the certificates being presented. If the signer for it is badguy.com,
probably not a good idea. Hopefully, normal people are not accepting CA certificates often. The only legitimate cases for it is usually your IT staff, where it's a situation like our Firebox, where they want some security mechanism or they have some other product that they want to. They'll be installing this for you. They probably have it in group policy, or they've probably even installed their own corporate CA onto the device itself. So hopefully, the normal user,
In most cases, no. There was an event I went to recently, some conference where their public Wi-Fi network was apparently doing HTTPS inspection for some websites. And so when you tried to go to one of those websites, you'd get a cert error because they're man in the middling it.
Gotcha.
I didn't really have time to go dive into it, but I guess it's out there in the wild too.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's that for that.
Yeah. And I guess we covered SNI as well, right? Yeah. TLS 1.3, make sure products support it that you use when it, comes out.
Yep, your browser should take care of it for you. Yep. In fact, most browsers support TLS 1.3 now. It's just a matter of servers picking up on it too.
Yep. And any devices that happen to be intercepting traffic as well.
That as well.
Cool.
All right.
Well, thanks for the edumacation about this HTTPS stuff.
Always. Time for me to go get another coffee. That's it for this week. If you like the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us. You can find me on Twitter at @XORRO_. I really need a better Twitter handle. And Corey is at @SecAdept. Please reach out to us if you have any questions or topic recommendations for future episodes. If you need your daily fix of security news and insights, videos, or in-depth research, go to secplicity.org. Thanks again for listening. See you later.